Just recently, organization has gone through a number of trials. 45 people were arrested on June 15th after a demonstration that took a delegation of people to Queens Park to demand that we speak to the legislature. We were refused, and there was a confrontation that occurred. It was about a battle that occurred on the Queens Park lawn. It lasted about 45 minutes to an hour. As a result of that, many people were injured, including cops and protesters. 45 people, protesters, were arrested ultimately over a two-year span and were put through courts in the year 2000. And one of the last trials, it's actually one more woman in the cells for the trial, was myself, Stephen Philippa, and John Clark, who were arrested a month later to so-called leaders of the organization saying that we planned a riot, etc. So the trial just finished, it lasted about 4 months, it ended up in a mistrial. Why we won is what I want to. And I want to argue that the reason that we were able to win, get a mistrial of the 12 jurors who were picked by us was because of the base that we have in the community. So I want to argue that the real win here was not about a week ago, you know, a mistrial was declared, although it was nice, but the real win is the fact that up to that point, our organizations continue to struggle on the streets, continue to win, and continue to fight in ways that we, the state and the police, didn't want us to do. And I truly believe, you know, having sat in that courtroom for 4 months, that had our organization not been based in the area that we were just Dundas and Sherburne, and I'm going to go back to Dundas and Sherburne in a second. And also Parkdale, which are two of the poorest neighborhoods in the area, I think we might have had problems during those 4 months. But it became clear throughout the trial, in terms of the testimony that we brought, and in terms of what was happening, that the reason we're at Queens Park, which were, you know, I think we heard that 22 people had died on the streets by the time we went to June 15th. They just couldn't. They couldn't get at that. They could try and say that, you know, organizations that we were criminals. I think the police chief described us as domestic terrorists. Is, I think, one of the words that he called us. The other was the Crown said that we were a cancer that had to be cut up from the organization in terms of the leadership. But what became clear is that they didn't understand the dynamic of the organization. And this is where I'm going to try and take you now in terms of where OCAP comes from and in our history and the history that we took to that courtroom, and I think many of the defendants took. And in order to understand organization, you have to go to Dundas and Sherburne. And I'm going to take you there, tell a few stories that are hard to tell. We estimate that since 1995, about 1,000 people have died on the streets of Toronto in the last seven to eight years. While the trial was going on, some of those people died. Some of them, Brian Boyd, Philip Toulouse, Leonard McGilvery. These are people that we worked with over the years. As we watch videos of June 15th, we see these people at the demonstration. So we've been organizing in this community now for the last 10 years. And for the last 10 years, we've worked in that community in terms of mobilizing, in terms of what we call direct action. So we would work with people in the community, we would walk the streets. I know that Beltran did some stuff, I've come down a few times, and John has been around and stuff. And we would walk, and we would go to the drop-ins, to the hostels, and we would begin to talk to people. I remember listening to Ashanti last night from New York City talking about going to your communities and talking. And for the last 10 years, OCAP has been working in those neighborhoods and speaking and talking to people around these issues. And what we've been able to do is create one of the most important voices in that community, and I would argue in Toronto, around poverty. Because for some of us who've grown up in poverty, I grew up in Levitsvi. And some of us who grew up in poverty, we rarely heard these kinds of voices. Most of the time, I grew up as a child, and even the community I work in, the day-to-day issues that you have to deal with make it very, very difficult to begin to talk about what is really going on. You know, if a mine shuts down, and all of a sudden your father's unemployed and can't feed his kids, and then they have to move you from Valdor to Ontario when, you know, nobody speaks your language. I mean, these are issues that you rarely get to discuss because you're just forced to survive. You know, your parents are trying to feed their kids. It's the same in Toronto, and that's the term where people are trying to live day to day. So when you bring that kind of voice, you know, that OCAP brought on that, you know, over the last 10 years, it really, really created a dynamic where for one of the first times, there was a voice that began to talk about what the poverty that people were experiencing was about. Not only that, but we began to talk to people about what they were experiencing. And quickly, we began to see what some of the major issues were. And I think some of those major issues now some people are working on. It became clear, for instance, that in 1995, when welfare cuts happened, 21.6%, but cuts 17,000 units of housing were cut, Landlord and Tenant Act, changes to welfare and workfare, we knew that this would have an effect on the community we worked in. Now, you have to understand that the community I work in is, and that OCAP was working on at that time, which is Dundas and Sherbourne, which is just east downtown Toronto, has a large number of social housing. Probably one of the largest projects there is the Regent Park, which was built in, I think, in the early 40s and 50s. And we'll move back to Regent Park in a second. It also has the largest number of hostel beds in the city. The largest hostel, men's hostel is in Canada, is Seton House. Has over 600 men there. And so you have lots of poverty. You have the poverty of people living in social housing, but on top of that, you have a very, very visible poverty of people living on the streets, right, to walk the streets and be living in the parks. And what we saw in 1995 when these measures came in, we saw a large increase of number who were forced into the hostel systems, into the parks, and onto the streets. And we began to see quickly the situation deteriorate. And I remember one of the first actions that OCAP did actually was, I think it's happening something similar tonight, but we marched 800 to 900 people to Rosedale. And in order to understand what that means, this Regent Park is, we took it from Regent Park to Rosedale, it's about a maybe 15-20 minute walk. And many of the people who were raised and born in Regent Park had never walked to Rosedale, never been through that community, and yet it was like 15-20 minutes away. And it was very significant to take people there. Also, you know, politically, the war that, you know, the politicians that rule that area, Rosedale and Regent Park are together. But it's always the rich Rosedale that get the politician. They have the most power. So it was very significant for us to do that. So we began to take people, we began to talk about those things. And as time went on, I just want to talk a bit more about the kinds of things that we were seeing. Because it was rough. It was a tough time. We had a drop in on a road named Parliament. And there's a whole bunch of poor people who live there. We would wake up in the morning, and I remember one morning, two women got murdered right across the street that we knew that were from that used to use the drop in and stuff. I remember one night, you know, we're open in the evening, and a couple of guys coming in after a shooting and saying, you know, somebody got shot and described the shooting. And I went and listened on the news, and they described exactly what had happened. And you begin to try and understand the dynamic of how can people live and survive in that kind of environment? How can on a day-to-day basis, you know, people live like this? And eventually what we began to do, we began to organize around those kinds of issues. And what led us to June 15th was that by June 15th, we had a situation where the city, through a project called Target Policing, we had a social cleansing that was going on in downtown Port. Right now, if you go to Dundas and Yonge, you'll see a $30 million park that they've just finished building for the businesses. And there's been a large push by the police and the politicians to move the homeless people from the downtown core, move them from the east downtown, from the parks, and they're doing this with an act we call the Safe Streets Act, where people are pretty much begging on the streets. So we saw this, not only once people were on the streets, we saw this attack on public intensify through the policing and the policing and the moving of people in the social cleansing. So by the time we went to Queen's Park on June 15th, some of us were very, very angry. We estimate about 1,500 people came to the demonstration, including, I would say, some 200 to 300 homeless people. I've watched last videos of the last three or four months right now, a lot of videos. And I see lots of faces. I see lots of people who came that day. Some of them were arrested that day. And we marched from Allen Gardens. And Allen Gardens has a lot of history for us because it's where we've been struggling and fighting for the last five to 6 years at least, in terms of like the park itself, because there have been large raids in the park. We had a safe park there that for 3 days that was working people on the streets and stuff. And we left that park and we marched to Queen's Park, and we asked that a delegation be received. It was refused. And at that point we regrouped, and then we moved forward. And then what occurred after that was a barricade came down, and we learned over time through watching videos and stuff. We had a sense of what we did, but we never really had a sense of what the cops did. But through trial and through other trials and stuff, we began to understand that what happened was that they immediately drove 12 horses into the crowd, which really escalated things quickly. And then there were two baton charges, like what they call punch outs, into the crowd. And then there's what led to immediately after that, people began to defend themselves, rip off sidewalks and throw bricks at the cops. And then there was a move across the other park, another baton charge, and people were moved out after about 45 minutes. And after the demonstration, there was a quick denouncement of OCAP and some of the administration, primarily by the media. Some politicians, but primarily by the media, and arrests began immediately, and arrests continued for the next, like I say, 2 years. What is significant in terms of June 15th is the post-June 15th stuff also, because I don't know any organization that could survive that kind of attack in terms of the media, in terms of the press, in terms of physically being beaten back like that, who could have managed to survive that. And from that period until our trial, we had a number of demonstrations which were very, very significant in terms of the people of the river. One in particular was the eviction of Mr. Flaherty, who at the time, I think, was the Minister of Social Services. Was this Lisa? Finance, Minister of Finance. A group of people went and evicted him from his office, a little bit more like a trashing of the office, but he was evicted from his office. And that was about a year after. And again, the repression was severe. I think some 20 odd people were arrested, including many of the people who had been in June 15th. And now we were seeing again some very serious conditions being put on our membership. I think John Clark, who was one of the main organizers of OCAP, was told that he could not go to demonstrations anymore. There was a $70,000 bail. Sean Lee Poppin had a $75,000 bail to get out. Omid, I forget what Omid's bail was, about something $10,000. We were going to be having a hard time to organize and then continue to do this because the conditions were very tough. So one condition, for instance, that we were given, many of the people were given on June 15th, were non-associations. And those kinds of conditions are very, very difficult in terms of mobilizing. So for instance, for 3 years now, I haven't been able to legally talk to John Clark, Doug Phillip. And for 2 months after our arrest, we had non-associations who were a member as a whole, and we won that in court. So after Flaherty, there was a number of demonstrations that were also significant. We tried to organize across Ontario. And I remember one of the largest demonstrations that occurred was in Toronto, where we shut down the business section after 9/11. I think it was about a month after. And that was a really intense time for our organization. Again, because we were under a lot of pressure. After 9/11, people were saying, you can't go. I was one of those people that said, actually, we shouldn't go to the business section. But there were people in the organization that said, no, that we have to go, that the attacks against poor people, Harris's attack actually after 9/11 intensified in terms of going after immigrants in particular. So we have to go. And I think 2,000 people showed up at 7 in the morning. It was an unreal, it was quite a fascinating demonstration. And then from there, the next two or three administrations that were quite significant organization, and probably the most fascinating were, we tried to open up a couple of buildings. Our first attempt was during the Tory convention, and it was called a place called Mission Squad. And we moved in, 60 people moved into the squad, and people were taken out hard. It was probably one of the hardest takeout, I think John was arrested that day. Lisa was arrested that day. It was a hard takedown. It was the amount of police force that was used on that night to take people out. They threw pepper spray in the squat, and they took them 2-3 hours to take people out at gunpoint from the squat. And the following day, we had another march where 20 other people got arrested, and then we had to regroup. Because we had done this under the Intercom Front, but OCAP was involved also. At that point, because we just had another 80 arrests and it was getting difficult to function, we decided we were going to have another demonstration. and this one was called the Pope Squad. We decided, and at that point, we were very inspired actually about what was happening in Montreal, because I know that by then, some of us had actually come to Montreal for the Overdale Squad and stayed for the first 3 days, but we weren't there when we moved. But we were very inspired by what was going on, and also we knew that in Quebec City, a couple squads were open, and you know, Ottawa tried to open a squad up, and I forget when Vancouver, the Woodward building happened, what period of time it was. I think it was either before or just after. So we opened up the Pope Squad, and for 3 months, we held the building. Some of it by luck, because we happened to go to a building that they could figure out who owned the building for a long period of time. And originally, the people who moved in were activists, I think, that moved in. But within a few days, people who were living on the streets began to move into the building. I have a theory of why that might be. They're pretty bad conditions. I don't know who could have lived in those kinds of conditions other than people on the streets, I don't know. So for 3 months, we try to work with people who were living there in terms of politically and in terms of personal stuff that they needed. And you have to understand that was done in a period, again, where in the year 2002, where the majority of our members were going through trial. All of the trials were coming up through 2000. We were seeing some of our friends being acquitted, some of them were being found guilty, some were being, you know, all that kind of stuff was going on. But in the middle of those trials, we again managed to go to a community, and I would argue it's probably one of the most important action in terms of, other than June 15th, that OCAP could have done in terms of organizing and mobilizing, and in terms of strengthening the organization. I think the Pope Squad forced us again in the same way that maybe did the San Sampo when they moved to that was called the Préfontaine. To begin to look at those issues, because very real people moved into those squats. People some hardcore people that have been living on the streets were living in the Pope Squad, and a whole bunch of issues that the people had to try and resolve and stuff that at times was very chaotic. You know, from the one point where, you know, the ETF would come and say that there's a gun call, and it was some chaotic times. But there were other times where I remember sitting in a meeting in the middle of the night talking to people, where people were trying to grapple with those issues, you know, in terms of what was going on, the living conditions, which were probably some of the worst in the city of Toronto, I would imagine, pretty rough. But it was through the Pope Squad, I think, that we managed to stay rooted and to stay grounded in terms of that particular community. We took something like 800 to 900 people from a park in Parkdale, a community that we'd always had a hard time working in. And there's still some debates going on in terms of, because the Pope Squad was shut down eventually after 3 months, and there's some debates within the people who were living there about how much we could do, what we should have done, and I think they're very healthy debates. And again, the reason I'm giving some of that history, I think, in order to understand, you know, having spent 4 months in trial and trying to go through these, you know, cops to say that they got hurt and whatever, very few of them understood that the organization was that well-founded. So I'll end a little bit with this. The last 4 or 5 days of the trial, where the jury began to deliberate, we spent a lot of time outside in the courtyard, and although we'd seen some people who were living, it was about 8 to 10 people living just in the courtyard there, just beside the court, and others around, a couple actually living right in the middle of the flower bed, like on university. You would sit there and you'd see them get up in the morning. And we began, because we were outside the court all the time, began to sit there and began to see them more regularly. We began to talk a little bit. So I knew some of them. Rita was pregnant with her partner, and we began to talk to them a bit. And I remember one day there was a court, the cops and the court were going around picking up everybody's sleeping bag, trying to throw them out, and there was a small action trying to stop it, you know, grab the stuff back and put it back where it belonged, and actually went okay. And the reason I mention these people is because I think that for me, and with how I stayed alive, and I can't still speak for Stefan and John, but every time you come out there, you see these people, you'd understand why June 15th had to happen and why it happened. It would really root you. And I'll end with two quick stories. On Thursday night, Mike and I were biking back. This is a few days after the decision and stuff. And we saw a whole bunch of people over there. There must have been about 12 or 13 that night. And we talked to people, you know, and some of the people we know, so they would shake your hand and they'd be happy for you. And then the following night, we rode back again and they were gone. They had been cleared out, obviously. All this stuff was gone. It was just cleaned up. And it's difficult. And I think if we're going to talk about how do we organize and how do we build in our communities, probably the most difficult thing to do is to try and begin to deal, how are you going to work in that context? Where you begin to know people and you know that they're living in hell, and you try and talk to them about the issues, and the next night you come and you know something has happened. And now we have to go back and we have to find out what the hell happened. And I know that going back to Dundas and Sherbourne over the last, you know, 3 or 4 days, that people on the streets understand that struggle to fight that OCAP has been involved in, some have been involved in, because they come and they tell us. I'll walk on the streets and they'll give me a hug and they'll be across the street and they understand what a mistrial means, and that's a win. And I think for me, in terms of the real win for OCAP, is not, you know, walking away from that court. Although it was nice, you know, it was nice to walk away from that court with the lawyers, but it's to go back to Dundas and Sherbourne and to share that with the people who are there, because we belong to them, they know me. And that's probably the highest win. And I'll end by saying this last thing I did. I remember after the Flaherty action, because we had a big demonstration. John got arrested, I think, in the morning. Sue got arrested at night. Sue calls us, another one of the organizers. Other people were getting picked up. And that following day, we had a big rally, which we had planned at Ryerson. There were people with the Flaherty action who were very anxious, who eventually did get picked up. Jean Mura, I think, got picked up. And I remember going, we had anywhere between 500 to 600 people. And I remember one of the things that I talked about, because at the time also there was a lot of talk about, I think it was on the Quebec Summit in Seattle and stuff. And I remember saying to people, who were thinking back in my mind, and I'm going back to Regent Park here, at the time that we had that meeting, Regent Park had closed down this community center. They had shut it down because there had been 5 black youth who had been killed in the last, I think, 3 or 4 months, right outside of the center, you know, over a period of time. And it was shut down. And I realized, thinking to myself, that it's really, really good to get together and to talk about the theory and the practice, or the theory and how we're going to do things. But if we haven't learned how to keep keep those centers open, then we're doing something wrong. So we can go to Quebec City, you know, for 2 days, and it was a good 2 days. But if you leave that city and you can't defend those community centers when they try and shut it down, then we have a problem in terms of how we're organizing. We have to learn how to do that. And I think in the activist community, we have to begin to know how to go to communities, how to work with communities, how to talk to people, as Shanti was talking about. Because without that, June 15th was okay, but again, if that center is not open, then we have problems. So for me, I think the discussion I would like would be to talk about, you know, how do we get people to work at that local level so that we can win those battles, but at the same time also, you know, bring those battles to a higher level in terms of systemic. So I'll end there. Okay.